Chapter 32. When Borges dropped his weapon, it had rolled out into the open. I grabbed at the tube, snagging the strap and reeling it back into the bunker. I fumbled with it. My snap rifle was ineffective anyway and almost out of ammo. Borges' tube was all I had left. Clamping the tube between my knees, I used both hands to wrench at the focusing dial. It was stiff and would barely move. Something in the mechanism was broken, or the designers hadn't wanted operators to fool with the range settings unless they really wanted to. Outside, I could see the lizards milling, taking cover. Some had fled, but I could tell a few were rallying. I couldn't see any more tails or hear the chatter of human weapons. Only a few places were actively firing, and that was sporadic. I tried to talk to whoever might be in charge, but I didn't get any response on my comlink. That was a very, very bad sign. I tried not to think about the rest of the cohort. This was about me and the last double wave of angry reptiles. I told myself that if I killed them all or drove them off, I'd worry about the rest of my unit afterward. I considered slipping down into the tunnels, but I knew that wasn't going to work. I'd already seen them down there, flittering by in the dark. They were trotting to and fro, probably looking for holdouts and survivors. No, I didn't want to die in the trenches. Out here I had a clear field of fire, and at least I'd meet my end under an open sky. I wasn't sure if the bio-specialists up on Corvus would revive me anyway. If they got another chance to correct the error many thought my continued existence to be, I figured they might take it. I cranked on the tube, getting the focusing dial to move, but slowly. I cursed and growled in frustration. Maybe on the world where this damned weapon was made, everyone had 300 pounds of torque in their hands or claws. I had no idea why it was so hard to move, but I was impressed by the weaponeers that used them. No wonder they were mostly big guys with powerful arms. I heard the telltale click as it snapped into position at last. Configured for longer range, I immediately employed the tube by heaving it onto my shoulder and sighting in the direction of the surviving juggers. I saw a tail sticking out from behind a broken column, and I depressed the firing stud. The results shocked me. The tube rocked in my hands. I hadn't expected recoil. But I knew that the most powerful of lasers and particle beam weapons gave a small kick. Anything that hurled mass and energy out of one end pushed in the opposite direction. The tail was only scorched, but it was withdrawn quickly. I smiled and went hunting for the sniper who had killed Borges. He found me first, spraying a shower of bullets my way. I ducked and waited, counting to three. Then I popped up again and sighted quickly. Just as I'd hoped, the Saurian had risen up, coming out of cover to get a better shot. Maybe he thought he'd hit me. Whatever the case, I caught him full in the chest with a focused beam of energy. He did a backflip and came down in three smoking pieces. I was ready for the recoil this time, and I had my arms wrapped around the unwieldy tube. The weapon felt like it wasn't built for humans to operate, and I understood that more clearly every time I tried to use it. Once I had control of the tube again, I looked up, and my jaw dropped. A shape loomed over me. A jugger had come up out of nowhere, probably from behind me while I was firing toward the sniper. I knew right off I was screwed. I was lying in a shallow scratch in the pockmarked courtyard, totally exposed to the teeth of the giant that closed in for the kill. Compounding my sense of shock and dismay, I saw that this jugger was special. The rigid scar on his belly was unmistakable. This was my mystery lizard back to fight me once again. My first instinct was to attempt to wriggle down a hole. I got my boots in, but I could tell right away I wasn't moving fast enough. I lifted the heavy tube and interposed it between me and the jugger. This didn't impress him. He lunged and those huge jaws came down. I saw the wet flesh inside. The mouth was so huge. I was about to be swallowed. But the jugger's snapping jaws came up short. The tube had hit the back of his throat. Instinctively, he shut those massive jaws. My hands were almost chomped along with the tube. I had no idea what the tube was made of, but it didn't buckle. It didn't even dent. Instead, a dozen 4-inch fangs snapped and blood gushed over me, the Jugger's blood. My fingers sought the firing stud, but I couldn't find it. I realized in horror that the trigger mechanism was inside the Jugger's mouth and closed with countless snaggled teeth. A roar washed over me, and I knew the big lizard wasn't happy. Then he jerked up his head, and I felt the tube being torn from my hands. I scrambled to hold on. It was hard because there was a hot slurry of spit and blood all over that tube, and nothing much to hold on to. But somehow I managed to get one hand wrapped up in the strap and the other hooked on the adjustment knobs. The Jugger reared up, lifting the tube high, and I went with it. I found myself dangling about 15 feet up and looking down at a beast which was eager to finish its meal. I knew what was going to happen next, and it did. The Jugger opened its mouth. I felt myself sliding into the teeth, following the tube which was 2/3 of the way down into that gaping maw. I only had one split-second chance, and I took it. I reached my hands farther along the tube and touched the firing stud. Fortunately, the weapon had been primed and charged. At my touch, it shot a gout of energy directly down the throat of the Jugger. He'd gotten more than he bargained for, I suspected. Dead on his feet, the monster swayed and toppled. His guts were a steaming mess on the ground. When he went down, he thrashed for a moment. I found myself pinned under him. Something hit my head and my helmet dented and the faceplate shattered. I lay there on my back, under 1,000 pounds of shivering reptile. My breath came in ragged gasps. The Jugger had stopped breathing altogether. I tried to move. I tried to free myself, but I couldn't. My comlink was either broken or there wasn't anyone listening. After a period of struggling, I paused and listened. The battlefield was quiet now. I couldn't hear a thing, even with my visor gone and the open, wet heat of Steel World's night air rolling into my face. I don't know how long I laid there. It might have been an hour or 10 minutes. When you're trapped under a mass of flesh, it warps your perspective. Finally, however, I saw something new. Lights glimmered and played over the ground around Bunker 5. I blinked and recognized the vehicle. It was an air car, a nice, shiny one that reminded me of rich, snotty aliens. Could it be the Galactics? Or maybe the Nerbs? It made sense either way. They were inspecting the damage, tallying the count. Who had left more bodies on this bloody field now that it was over, them or us? I felt an urge to do something. Not so much to get rescued, I didn't really expect them to care about me one way or the other. But I wanted them to know my side wasn't out of this yet. I reached down and drew my sidearm. It wasn't much, sort of like a snap rifle with less power, range, or accuracy, but it did fire pellets when you needed a last-ditch weapon. Very carefully, I sighted on the air car. I squeezed the trigger 4 times, maybe 5. Orange sparks pinged off the bottom of the ship. I knew I'd hit it at least. It wasn't enough to damage the vehicle just to get their attention. The response came about a second later. The air car wobbled, then lifted rapidly. I smiled. Maybe it had been the Galactics after all. They'd been shot down before, and quite possibly they were gun-shy today. I relaxed and considered passing out. But I wanted to see what was going to happen, so I held on to consciousness with an effort of will. The weight of what amounted to a dead dinosaur lying over 1/3 of my body made every breath a struggle. Already my feet were numb. I knew I wasn't going to last the night. Stealthily, the air car returned. I opened one eye and wondered if I'd been dozing. Was I dreaming now? No. The air car played a quiet light over my part of the courtyard. Everything was still. A few bodies twitched now and again, a testament to the raw vigor of these reptiles. They often moved and tremored hours after their apparent deaths. I could see the light only because a scrap of my shattered night vision visor was still operating. It caught the gleam of their lights, showing them as a soft green glow. I wasn't sure if they were using infrared or what, but it was catching the attention of my dying suit.